Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host around these parts. I am so glad that you've decided to tune in. Today we've got Mark Jobe with us from New Life Chicago. This is a fantastic church that you need to be following along. I was joking with Mark before we hit record that I've been a fan from afar for a while, and so it's a real honor that I get a chance to talk with him. This is it's an incredible church on many layers, 25 locations, 43 worship services, which that in and of itself is an incredible stat. They're doing incredible things on the multi-site front, but they're also urban, multicultural. They do live teaching. There's all kinds that we're going to get to unpack here, and they've been involved really on the leading edge of the restart movement or rebirth movement, seeing churches restarted. So, Mark, I am so glad to have you on the show today. Thanks for being here.
Hey, it's so good to be with you, Rich. This is awesome to be able to connect with your listeners today.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here. Why don't you give us a sense, if people were to arrive this weekend, kind of what would they experience? And then give us a bit of the New Life story. I know it's a lot to compress, over just a few years. How do you, kind of give us a sense of what's happened there? And if people were to arrive this weekend, what would they experience?
Well, hopefully not chaos, but that could that could be a possibility.
Yes.
You know, the thing is, it depends on what location you arrive at. So, like you said, we are a church. We're one church that meets at 25 locations. And so if you were to arrive at our little village location, which is in a Mexican immigrant community just north of us, you would experience a church that is vibrant in Spanish. They wave flags, they're loud, they dance, they jump, it's right in the middle of a Mexican immigrant community. The pastor there is Paco Amador, born in Mexico, came here, very smart guy, loves Jesus. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that attend there are undocumented immigrants. Mm-hmm. That attend there, have been serviced by tons of ministries that happen out of there. If you were to travel north a couple of miles, you would land in Lincoln Park. Lincoln Park meets in a traditional building with stained glass windows, two blocks north of DePaul University. Mm-hmm. You look at the faces in that congregation. They're mainly white, young professional. No one grew up in the city. They came to the city to study at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. Or one of those got their first tech job, loved the hipster neighborhood, coffee. Mm-hmm. The worship would be a little bit more tame. They don't have flags. They don't have dancers. They don't wave them around. Bobby Moss is the pastor there. Bobby's an adjunct professor at Moody. And you would sense a whole different dynamic. But you would still have... it's one church, New Life Community Church. The discipleship system is the same. The message topic would be the same. The series title would be the same. Mm-hmm. Our discipleship path would be the same. And the overall vision that's cast from the front would be the same. Those pastors then would gather. Mm-hmm. 32 pastoral couples that we have. They would gather on Monday morning to mm-hmm. debrief. We're talking, meeting together, all of our pastors from around the city, super relational, high five, slap on the back, very informal, but all kind of connected to one vision. Mm-hmm. To reach the city of Chicago, make disciples, and transform the neighborhoods in which we live.
So thank you so much. It's great to get a good overview. Again, if you're not following New Life, this is a church you should be following. So I want to kind of dig into how you're keeping so many locations together on the same page. I love that you led with kind of diversity, like, hey, each of these communities reflects the community they're in. That's fantastic. I think a lot of times when we think of the multi-site movement, the unfair thing that's kind of lodged against it is it's mixed church, hey, they're all the same, bang them out, let's make them look all the same. The pragmatic thing that's behind that is trying to drive kind of commonality among them. But you actually seem to be at New Life, you've been able to say, hey, let's have some variety, but find some commonality. Why is it, or what is God using in the midst of that to help you stay connected on the same page, marching in the same direction?
Yeah. And that's a challenge, Rich. It really is. Because not only is it a challenge because we're in 25 different locations, different sizes as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll have a location that is 100 people and a location that's 1,500 people and everything in between. So it's a challenge there. Add to that the multilingual. Mm-hmm. Out of our 43 worship services, I think 11 are in Spanish and one is in Mandarin. So you have the multilingual element. On top of that, you have the multicultural element, the diverse neighborhood element. And so, but I think what draws us together is a couple of things. Number one, a common, clear vision that we've all bought into. Mm-hmm. That we're clear about the vision. We're all pursuing this vision together. We've defined our reality and our God-given mission, and we're pursuing it aggressively together. Secondly, we are committed not only to the same vision, but we have a commonality in the values that we're embracing, mm-hmm. the culture that we're seeking to embrace this vision, but we're pursuing it in this kind of culture. We're creating a culture that we embrace, mm-hmm. that value certain things that maybe other churches wouldn't value as much as we value. Mm-hmm. And we're super highly relational as well. Mm. So all of our pastors come together every Monday. Mm-hmm. We travel, come together every Monday. Twice a month, we come together all in the same spot. And then twice a month, we break up into coaching groups. All of our pastors are groups of about five, led by one of our seasoned pastor that coaches them. And, you know, you'd walk into a meeting, you'd hear a lot of laughter, worship together, pray. Just one of our pastors, I was at the hospital last night, found out that his little boy, Zion, has a real serious disease. But there were several other couples right there at 10 o'clock at night. Mm, emergency.
That's great.
Praying, anointing the little boy with oil, praying over him. Mm. And so a real sense of community, mm-hmm. clear vision, values, high relationship, moving together.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. I love that you're leading, you know, with that. I think so many times we can go to the tactic rather than the relationship, right? We can go to the, like, you know, well, we stay together because we use the same run sheet, you know, as opposed to this is who we are. Yeah, practically on the teaching side, I know, you know, you guys do live teaching across all those locations. Again, one of the misnomers about the multi-site movement is that it's all about video, and it's not. Actually, the statistics show us it's actually a minority of multi-site churches. Some are only around 15% that use all video. Most are using some variety. Now, you're on the other end of that spectrum where you're using all live teaching. Can you kind of get in behind that as the lead pastor? Help us talk through how you're ensuring kind of a common conversation happening, but then allowing, you know, all these various, you know, people outside of the relationship, all these various folks to kind of plow their own fields as they're going from a teaching point of view.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, Rich, I have to say, because, boy, not only are we all preaching on the same passage, but we're in different communities. And so some of the challenges of, say, we've actually spread out to some of the suburbs that are a little bit more white, more middle class. Most of our locations are in the city. But some of the challenges that sort of an ethnic community in the city, what they face, and some of the suburban locations face, I mean, the challenges and the problems are different. Mm-hmm. And so the conversation around that is incredibly rich, mm-hmm. when it comes to message prep and how we preach it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've evolved over the years when it comes to common teaching. When we first started, we were about four locations and we did not do common teaching. Mm. But we soon discovered, like, hey, hold on a second. When we come together, it feels really weird that some guy's preaching on 10 horns of Revelation and the other guy's preaching on love thy neighbor. It feels like we're eating different meals. And so we did a series together that I prepared. And after that, I asked the pastors, hey, do we want to go back? They said, no, let's all stay on this. And so we,
oh, that's good. Since
many years ago, in the beginning, I would sort of prepare the outlines for a little bit. Then I thought, we have a great team here. Why am I doing all the work? Come on. I got
How many outlines can one person write?
Exactly. And so then we started doing it as a team together when our group was smaller. As we grew, we felt like we can't spend most of our team time working on messages. It seemed like it consumed too much time. And so right now we've evolved to this system. What mm-hmm. we do is we lay out the entire year together mm-hmm. as a team. We have a group of the pastors that are wired more for sermon development, outlines, think a little bit more like that. We have people with PhDs and people that have never stepped in a Bible school in their life. And so now what happens is we assign the series. Once the series are determined, we assign the series to one of the subgroups, one of our BTC groups. And so that team works on that series.
Oh, that's cool.
And so like our entire year is laid out, but not the same pastors are working on the series. And so by the time I arrive to a series, we have all the outlines already laid out. They work with our communications director who, you know, works on the imaging, the graphics and the paragraph. And if there's a video involved in it, the video intro and that. All the pastors are involved in the sermon prep. So everybody gets an input. And then when you get an outline, obviously you have to, we don't do manuscripted mm-hmm. and we don't say you have to use these points.
Okay.
It's text and here's the outline, but we need to make sure you make it yours. Mm-hmm. So our pastors had the freedom to carve the wording to something that fits them. And then the delivery is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go to, you know, more of our sort of young professional, they're a little bit, people respond to humor and insight, you mm-hmm. know, they like to laugh and it's insightful, mm-hmm. but the pastors don't tend to be like super, super, you know, high charged mm-hmm. in delivery. Mm-hmm. But you go to our, you know, Puerto Rican neighborhood, you know, we got a Puerto Rican pastor named Danny Lopez, man, he preaches, he was raised in a black church.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his delivery style, man, he raises his foot. He really charges up. He really.
Yeah. If you're not sweating, you're not preaching.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he works up a sweat. Yeah. So his delivery style is different than the other guy's delivery style. But our message and our theme and our focus and our call is the same. Beginning of the year, we do 21 days of fasting and prayer. We're all on it together.
Okay,
all cool. of our locations, thousands of people across our different locations are fasting and praying together for the same things as we multiply. And so our emphasis is the same. Sometimes our baptism Sundays are the same. Mm-hmm. Our flow is the same, but our delivery and style is contextualized to the community that we're trying to reach.
That's so helpful, Mark, to get kind of behind the scenes on that. I know there are folks that maybe should be thinking about multi-site, but they get squeezed out by the video thing. And they're like, I just don't feel like God's calling us to that. And a church like yours that has found a way to say, no, we want to raise up leaders who can speak and we're going to do that, but still stay together, I think is fantastic. That's great. I'd love to hear the other piece of the story that I love that God's writing at New Life really is the restart side of this conversation. So, you know, I believe you've been a part of 14 church restarts. Is that true? Is that the number that's floating around out there?
I believe it is about 14.
That's
so
amazing.
We have 25 locations and about 14 of them were restarts.
Now, there's a lot we could talk about here. We could talk for hours just on this, but give us, you know, what do you mean by restart? How has that kind of factored into what God has done there? How is it a part of your strategy today? What's happened in the past? And then what are you looking to the future? Give us a sense of kind of the restart story.
So initially, I just thought traditional church planting, find a location, rent a school, gather a core, launch it. But a couple of years into our process, I got a call from an older gentleman on the north side of Chicago that said, hey, Mark, you don't know me. I've heard of you. We need your help. I'm like, okay, how? He said, I've been chairman of the board for about 40 years of a historic Baptist church. And he said, we've had some great days, awesome days. This had one of the largest Sunday schools in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But then he got a little, lowered his voice, and he said, but we've hit on hard times. And we're down to about 30 people in an auditorium that seats 350 people. And we're afraid we're going to close the doors. And I said, I feel bad for you, but I don't know how, I don't know what we could do. Mm-hmm. And he said, come up. So I met with him and I said, hey, his name is Chuck. He's 87 now. I said, Chuck, if you are proposing me to come pastor seniors, most of them were like in their 70s or 80s. I said, I think I'd do a terrible job at that. But I would be excited about reaching the community. I just don't know. The community average age is about 27. I said, I don't know how those would fit together. That led to our first, what we call a restart. We actually birthed the church in a historic building, and we restarted a church. This church was 110 years old. Mm-hmm. And we replanted it within its building. We thought it was a one-time thing. Right. We loved it because the older mixed with the younger. I mean, I brought in people, guys that had mohawks, painted mohawks with 75-year-old Baptists or good old Baptist, traditional Baptist people. So it was quite a mixture of people.
That's amazing.
And it was a beautiful thing. After we did that, we started getting calls from other churches. And so we've restarted congregations in Baptist churches, Congregational, Mennonite, Lutheran, Evie Free churches. And they pretty much all have the same story. I was just – think about this, Rich. I was at the 10-year anniversary of a restart that we did 10 years ago in the Lincoln Park community. Mm-hmm. That church now – is 135 years old.
Amazing.
R.A. Torrey preached there.
Amazing. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
They started it 135 years ago. They gathered on a corner and they prayed this, Lord, may this church not exist for its own glory, but for the glory of Jesus. Mm. So 135 years later, we gathered the congregation out on the corner and we re-prayed that prayer, because when we go in there, we take on the history of that location. Mm. I think spiritual colonialism can be terrible, where you come in and say, hey, you guys failed, you blew it. Now we're here with our drums and our instruments and a new style, and we're going to reach this community. I think we need to honor the past and build on the legacy that they gave us, but honor them, celebrate the past, embrace the past. Don't close it down. Don't shut it down. Don't say because it wasn't our brand, it doesn't matter. We embrace whatever brand it was that our gospel preaching, we celebrate it, and then we build on it.
Yeah, this is a part of what I love about what has happened at New Life is, you know, there's a lot of conversations, or not a lot, there's a growing conversation out there around mergers and, you know, all that kind of thing. And a lot of that, again, I think it goes back to the way God has led through you, Mark, and to your team. I think a lot of those conversations end up being, they feel very mechanical. They feel like, okay, we've got some new product that we're going to put into some old building. And I love that your heart, you know, really celebrating the fact that God was already there. He's been working for 135 years, and you happen to be a piece of that puzzle. New Life is a part of that equation now. It's not like God wasn't there and now he is there, which I think is amazing. What would you say, you know, there are probably leaders listening in today who are thinking about maybe engaging in a rebirth or a restart, or thinking they maybe are on the lead church side of the equation, where they're growing and they have the good problem, the gold-plated problem of, like, you know, there seems to be some momentum, and they get these calls, because this happens increasingly, you know, to other churches are call them. What would you say some of those initial steps that they should be taking should be as they're interacting with another church, with maybe adjoining, not even a joining church, just a church that calls them and says, exactly like that guy who called you years ago, hey, can you come and help us? What would you say to those leaders today?
Yeah, so I've coached people, hundreds of people down this conversation, and this could be a whole podcast in and of itself. But I would say, first of all, when you sat down with that group of usually elderly people, mm-hmm, that are in a difficult circumstance, I think two things need to be on your mind. Number one, it's not really as much about strategy. Those people are asking, can I trust you? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get into what this will look like, the mechanics. I think the first meeting needs to be, this is who I am. This is what I believe. This is my heart. I think the second thing I would say to pastors is, don't look at it as a land grab, because if you go in feeling like, wow, we get free real estate and we're going to save ourselves $3 million and you put your hand around it, then you're tempted to manipulate. You're tempted to sort of force it to happen.
Yep.
I want a kingdom win. And I think when we put our hands around it, you know, I've seen people try to stack up votes. In other words, a small congregation, let's put members in there to stack up votes. They manipulate. Just to me, it feels very ungodly, really. Absolutely. I want a kingdom win. And if I feel like there's going to be this battle, bitter fight, I'll walk away from it. I don't want to fight over land. I don't want to fight over real estate. I don't want to feel like it's a takeover. Mm-hmm. I want it to be a kingdom win in which people invite us into it, even though they know it's going to be difficult and change is always hard. I want people that invite us into it. We honor them. I tell you what, one of the best heart checks for me, Rich, I had an 87-year-old grandmother that was a godly woman, traditional, went to a Baptist church. She was traditional. She liked the hymns. And she's so lovely. I loved my grandmother. And I ask myself this question when I go into a restart. I say, if my grandmother was a part of this core, how would I want her to be treated?
Oh, that's good.
And it really makes me feel like, okay, go slow, gentle, talk through. I'm visionary, so I tend to like want to move fast, but it puts a heart check on me. How would I want my grandmother to be treated if she was a part of this congregation?
Absolutely. I appreciate that you're underlining that. At Liquid Church, I had the privilege of being a part of two restarts, rebirths, and the way I've articulated that, and it really literally is just, you and I have never talked before, but just mirroring what I've learned from you from afar, that the way I've articulated in other paths is I think there has to be a heart change in the life of both churches. One, in our life from the kind of, let's say, the lead church in the conversation, we have to get to, I know for me, I got to the point where I was willing to do whatever it takes to help this church, even if that was not seeing them join us, that you get to the point where like, I just want to help you. I just, my heart is softened to you. I want to do whatever we can. I'm heartbroken by what's happened here. You know, we had the second church that we were a part of a rebirth that the summer before they merged with us. There were down to two people attending on Sundays, the person who was speaking and the person who was opening the doors. And you know, and you're just like, gosh, I want to see something happen here. And then on the other side, on the joining church side, I think they do need to come to the place where, for us, the language we used was that there was a death that needed to take place, that they had to acknowledge, hey, that what has happened has come to a close and now something new is going to happen. And it's not in a like super negative, but just in a, hey, we're excited about the future point of view. And as the lead church, we have to hold those moments very tenderly. We have to steward people through that very tenderly. And I agree with what you're saying. You know, you don't, you know, it's not about power. It's not about, hey, we want to force something to happen. It's about how do we care for this person? How do we care for this community? And I think God honors that. I think he honors that, that process for sure. Now, there's some resources you've provided for this at newliferestart.org. I would suggest if you're listening in today that you want more information on that, you should go over there. There's two things. First of all, there's a video. It's 10 minutes and 30 seconds. Everyone should watch it. It's great. It's super touching. I've used that video lots in talking with church leaders over the years. It's a great video. And then the other, you've put together an ebook, really a booklet here called God Was Already Here, Restarting Sacred Spaces, which you can download there. And that's a great tool, a great conversation starter as churches are really looking at this whole restart conversation. I would strongly suggest that people go over there and check that out. Mark, is there anything else you want to share before we move on? This is such an important topic. Is there anything else in this area you want to share before we kind of wrap up the episode?
I guess I would say this about the restart. So there's a twofold approach. It's one is just planting. Restart is like planting. I think any church that's serious about multiplication in the United States of America, whether you're rural or urban, you can't ignore the thousands of practically empty buildings that are out there. I call them sacred spaces that we can recapture. And so there's something about redemption. It's complicated. It's more complicated than just planting a church. Planting a church, you're finding a neighborhood and you're bringing a core. restarting, you're dealing with an existing traditional core, you're bringing your core, and you're reaching the neighborhood. So you're dealing with three groups of people. If it's done well, there's a beautiful redemptive story that can be told by these restarts. And plus, these buildings aren't going to be turned into strip malls or even worse, turned into mosques or torn down. And so we feel like, especially in a place like Chicago, like we'll never recapture that sacred space if we lose it. So let's make sure that we're redeeming it. So if you're interested in multiplication, you can't ignore the whole restart.
Absolutely. You know, we, over time, you know, we switched to really talking with churches proactively, which is a whole other conversation. And, you know, I walked into a church and we had an initial conversation with them, and we were about 6 months late. They're exactly what you had said. The church ended up, the building got converted into some hip, cool urban condos, and the physical footprint of what the church was doing was greatly reduced. From my perspective, it was a bad deal. The developer got a very good deal out of that, because this, you know, group of elders, they were trying to figure out what to do, and they saw, you know, maybe we could send a few hundred thousand dollars to missions, which was wonderful, but their, you know, what they gave up was ultimately not just the financial resources, but the opportunity for the gospel to impact that neighborhood. Not that God won't speak anymore in that community, but it just has missed an opportunity there to see something great happen.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
But let's jump into the lightning round. This is a kind of the way we cap the episode. We ask kind of similar questions to everybody that's on the episode. Mark, what's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year that is shaping your thinking or ministry?
There's a couple of books I've read recently. I'm an avid reader, and I read both Christian and non-Christian books. Mm-hmm. There's a book called Essentialism that I thought was really,
fantastic.
Really
good. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic book. Read it recently. Have had basically took the principles from Essentialism and took it to all our staff and said, I want you to write your essential purpose as it relates to your ministry of the church. And so we have all of our staff has their essential purpose, not your job description, but your essential purpose.
That's good.
It's different than, so this is what I do, not the task of what I do, but this is the purpose. And every 3 months I have them write the three top goals that they're seeking to achieve under that essential purpose. It's simple, but it takes a lot of work to clarify and work through what is your essential role. So I think that was, I think too many of us are so scattered in what we do.
Right.
A lot of stuff, but we've never asked ourselves, yeah, but who am I? What is my essential purpose? What is my sweet spot? And that takes a lot of work and soul examination.
Very good. Very good. What's another ministry you look to that kind of inspires you, that you're tracking with, you're watching, kind of learning from them?
Yeah, some of them are international.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Recently, I've got to know a guy by the name of Alan Platt, who pastors a church called Doxodeo. They're doing some things that are similar to what we're doing. They're out of South Africa, but planting in other countries. Love their heart, their strategic vision. I think they're a good group worth looking at.
Very good.
Another group that's actually overseas, but a great group of people they're part of something called Commission, which is under the umbrella of New Frontiers. They're kind of Reformed Charismatic, which is an interesting mix, aggressively planting churches with just a great spirit, a healthy balance in how they plant churches. And they're out of the UK doing a great job. Guy Miller leads that. Terry Virgo's the leader of it. Guy Miller, I think they're a group worth watching and learning from.
Very good. That's fantastic. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would that be with and why?
Oh, man, I would have said 2 weeks ago, I would have said Billy Graham.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. know, incredible leader.
Thinking a lot about Billy Graham these days. And, you know, what struck me about Billy Graham is this, the simplicity of his faith, the centrality of the gospel, and the boundaries that he put around his ministry to guard his integrity. And I kind of regret that I didn't get those 15 minutes with Billy Graham, but I would have talked to him about that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I, same thing as we've watched, obviously all these videos get shared. And I don't know if you saw, there's a video out, Woody Allen must've had a television show at some point. And there's this video of Woody Allen and Billy Graham. Billy Graham goes on this Woody Allen talk show. And what an odd pairing, right? These two people. But the part that I was struck by is I was like, well, two things. One, it's amazing to me that Billy Graham took the risk to say, I'm going to go on that show. And I don't know that there's a lot of leaders today of Billy Graham's stature that would take that risk, whatever the modern equivalent of going on the Woody Allen show would be. Yeah. And then the second, his genuine gracious care for Woody as an individual. Like, it comes out that, like, actually at the end of the day, I think there's a little bit of that. I'm willing to be a fool for the gospel to win one. And I actually don't think Billy Graham cared that there was a risk involved. He was like, I just want to connect with this guy, Woody Allen, because he comes off as like, wow, really caring, really loving. You know, obviously you see all the preaching videos. Those are all amazing to watch. But this one struck me because of the kind of personal interaction. That's amazing. Well, I can imagine leading a growing, you know, thriving church, really network of churches, amazing thing that God's doing there. It takes a lot out of you. What do you do just for fun when you want to kick back, relax, you know, have a lot of fun together?
You know, yeah, you covet that extra time that you have. So at this season of my life, I have three children. That I have a 19-year-old that just came back from Nepal and Mozambique. Mm. I have a 24-year-old son that's actually involved in ministry with me, which has been a blast to coach him and mentoring, cool. And a 25-year-old daughter and a wife that I'm so excited to travel with my wife because we haven't been able to do a lot of that. So now the first person that I ask if any trip is, honey, would you go with me?
Right.
And if not, I'm stuck with one of the other pastors, but I invite her first. And so right now, most of the stuff that I like to do revolves around hanging out with them, doing sports together, having a cup of coffee together, just a lot of time. I'm covering that time together right now.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you being on the show today, Mark, going out of your way. I was really honored to get a chance to chat with you. If people want to kind of track with New Life, what's the best way for them to do that? Where can they kind of check in on you guys?
Yeah, our website's www.newlifechicago.org. I have some social media stuff usually under Mark Job Chicago that they can track with, but a lot of the stuff is right there on our website at newlifechicago.org. Cool. I also have an app called Straight Talk that has a lot of the teaching that we do. Mm-hmm. And I have a radio program here in Chicago that I do daily, Monday through Friday. And so that's another great way to track.
Fantastic. We'll link up to all of that in the notes. Mark, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you so much for going out of your way. Appreciate what you're doing. And thank you for the way you're helping so many churches.
It's been great to be with you, Rich.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.